It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so I hope your microphone's in the right place. I have no idea.
It's fine.
I also have no idea how much is in the hat. My mother-in-law used to feed stray cats in her backyard.
Yeah. I heard that's a bad idea.
I think that makes sense, all things considered.
That it's a bad idea?
Yeah. Consequently, she ended up with a large community of feral stray cats out there that interbred, like, a lot.
And hung out around her house?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And, like, children impregnating their parents and things like
mm-hmm,
that. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of... And because we didn't get them fixed or anything. But a lot of what became the household pets came out of this group.
Sure.
And, in fact, Tigger and Grey Boy, who were Trish's cats when I met her, came out of this group. And it's funny because, like, we always like to refer to our pets like their siblings, because we think of them as our children, but as adopted children, so they're adopted siblings. But Tigger and Grey Boy are actual brothers,
sure,
actually from the same litter.
Sure.
But anyway, so, cats that had been out there for a long time, named Pookie, had a litter of cats in spring of 2001. At this point, Trish and I have been dating a little over a year, officially, like a year and 3 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had visited her parents' house before once, but not much. But
to give me some context, did you were you on my team at this time?
Probably. Did I say 2001? I meant 2002. I must have been, because
it seems like you
were. Yeah, because she and I got married and bought the house and everything while we were still at Apply.
Yeah, yeah. But I think you started dating while you were on my team.
No, we started dating about the time I started working there.
Okay.
It's almost exactly matches up to that.
Okay.
So at this point, we're not living together. We're not engaged. None of that yet. But it's enough that I go visit her family with her.
Sure, sure.
And we went, and there was a new set of kittens. And their eyes were barely open, but they were open, and they were still living in the cardboard box with Mom and all that.
Right.
And there were four of them. What turned out to be two girls and two boys, but at that age it was hard to tell yet.
Yeah.
So one of the girls was named Daisy, and one of the girls was named George. And then there was a little gray and white one who had a very, like, wrinkled face and kind of droopy ears, so we called him Yoda.
Mm.
And then there was sort of a tabby one who, very young age, hissed at my mother-in-law.
Wow.
So she called him Sir Hiss-a-Lot. And I love kittens and I love cats, but I'm allergic. So, like, we're going to visit the cats, but I'm not, obviously, because they were like, oh, you could get a cat. I'm like, no, I can't get a cat. I'm allergic.
Mm.
But I absolutely fell in love with Sir Hiss-a-Lot. He had the most amazing eyes. They were just huge and green and awesome. And so I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I decided I'd give it a risk. And besides, I'd found out, you know, apparently if you vacuum a lot and you give them baths regularly, it can be okay.
Oh, yeah, I think you've said this before.
Yeah. And so I was like, and he's a baby, I will teach him to accept the baths early on. So, renamed him Twiglet.
Mm-hmm.
And he came home to me. Trish, for whatever reason, drove to her parents and got him and brought him, but I didn't go with for some reason.
Mm.
So one night she brings him home. It was like June, early June. He was like 5 weeks old.
Little
and confused And not super happy.
Yeah, probably not at first.
That first night, he just wandered around the apartment echolocating.
Really?
Just yelling all the time. But not scared or anything. He's just like, meow, meow, all fucking night. But so he became my first, like, pet that I got. Like, I like I, they were childhood pets.
But your, the your first family pet was I, involved in that. This
yeah,
is
this
your
is the first pet,
pet
I... picked, and he and my buddy, and he ended up being just like me. Very fat, very lazy, liked to lie around, liked to eat, liked to complain, but ultimately wouldn't do much about it. Which made him actually really good to get along with. It one of the best stories we have about him is that when my niece is about three, she and her mom are visiting us here for the day. Mm-hmm. And the three-year-old is messing with the cat a bunch. Mm-hmm. She thinks it's fun, but she's doing the, like, trying to pet him too hard, trying to pick him up, tugging on the tail or whatever.
The Twiglet.
Yes. Okay. And he's like, meh, meh. And we're like, he doesn't like that. And finally, her mom is like, if you keep messing with him, he's going to bite you. And he's like, meh, meh, meh. And then finally she did something again, and he snapped at her. Didn't, like, actually make contact, but snapped. And the three-year-old freaks out. And her mother, who up to this point, since it was her first kid and everything, had been fairly, like, protective and stuff. Like, Trish and I kind of freeze. And her mom just goes, we told you that was going to happen, and look what happened. And he didn't even actually bite you. But he's really good. Like, if you would bug him, he would go, rah, rah. And then frequently, especially if it was kids, he left. That he knew. He was like, this is not good. I'm going to get out of here. very tolerant bugger. Although, when he first got introduced to Tigger and Grey Boy, he hissed at them. Like, they come over, they're like, oh, who's this new cat? And he's like... But karma is what it is, because when we brought home Ezzy, she did the same thing to him.
When was that? How long...
I always forget Ezzy's age. It was a few years later. At that point, it was just Twiglet and Grey Boy.
Were you married when you got Ezzy?
Yeah, yeah. It was okay. This house. It okay. Was this house. Yeah.
It
every
seems like
cat.
She was pretty young when I first started podcasting over here.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
She's like 12 now or something. I don't know. I always get mixed up about her age. But, and she's always been pretty small. But, so Twiglet's huge and fat and all this. But over time, he got real skinny. And he got... At first, it was like, cool, he's losing weight. And it was like, oh, he's really skinny. Turns out, he's got a hyperthyroid condition.
Oh.
So then we have to start getting him medicine in his ears. It's like a topical thing. Oh. So you rub it inside his ears, and it absorbs through the skin. And that kept things okay, but he always kind of stayed skinny after that. Hmm. And this spring, he turned 17, which is quite old for a cat.
Yeah.
You start referring to them as a senior citizen cat when they're about 13.
Yeah, right.
And I have known some that have made it to 20. I think I knew one that made it to 22.
Wow.
Grey Boy made it to 20, I think.
Wow.
But 17 is pretty old. And it's funny. When we first got him, he was the kitten. Because, you know, he was a kitten.
Yeah.
We had the other two. But we would call him that. We'd say Twiglet, or we'd call him Kitten. And so we never stopped calling him that. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when we got Ezzy, we're like, we can't call her Kitten.
Yeah.
So we had to call her Baby. And we still call her Baby or Baby Girl nowadays. and Addy was another. So we called him Little Guy because he's just a little guy. And we still call him that, which is also funny because as you can see, he's bigger than any of them ever were. He's enormous.
He is pretty big. We haven't talked about it. But
he's not even fat. But no, although he's getting a little chunk.
He's just a big cat.
He's just a huge cat. And Twiglet was a huge cat besides his weight. But, yeah, Addy blows him out of the water, so he's a little guy. But, so we called Twiglet Kitten all the way up to 17. But we also would call him Old Man and stuff because he was a cranky old man. And, like, he wouldn't want to play, but if you pushed him hard enough, he would play, and he could still beat you. But we didn't pay – he was still getting skinny. And we took him to the vet, and his thyroid was fine, and it was getting to the point where, like, you know, kidneys could be a thing. We might have to adjust for that.
Oh, kidneys.
But we were a little nervous, so we started buying food that was, like, very caloric. He would get special food in a pouch because we're like, this will gain him some weight. And he loved that food because he was always very food obsessed, even for a cat. But he was really getting skinny recently. And we finally sort of figured out he wasn't really eating.
Oh.
And so we made an appointment for the vet. And he got worse pretty fast. And by Monday, when we were finally taking him in, I was, every day I kind of expected I was going to wake up and he'd be dead.
Oh.
Because he got really, he didn't move a lot. He was absolute skin and bones. He didn't eat anything. And after a while, he wasn't even hardly drinking. And he would do this, Addy, knock it off!
Why is he doing that?
There's something over there that he thinks is dirty. Addy, knock it off. But I will throw more crap at you, dude. I got a lot of crap to throw. Addy, there we go. You hang out up there. He started doing this thing. I noticed this. Tigger died way early. Tigger died when he was like 15 or something. And his
that,
was
yeah.
cancer. Tons and tons and tons of cancer.
Yeah, I remember that.
And near the end, he was hiding under the bed in Steph's room, what we call Steph's room. Our spare bedroom, which the only person who ever sleeps in is Steph, so we call it Steph's room. And kind of hid away from stuff. And Twiglet started hiding behind a bunch of boxes in the family room, and he would just lay there for hours and hours and hours. So, yeah, I had a couple of nights, including the night before the vet visit, that I kind of thought he was. I'd wake up and he'd be gone, and so I couldn't sleep. And that night, he actually came into the bed, and he snuggled up with us and slept there most of the night on his little pillow. And his sister snuggled up with him, which is something she used to do a lot back in the day. They're pretty close. But for the last few weeks, I had noticed that both of the other cats had kind of started ignoring him.
Mm.
I wondered if they were kind of, like, letting him deal with his thing. But so that was nice. But then Monday, yeah, he could barely move, and we took him to the vet, and... Yeah, he was an absolute man. I mean, in addition to being hugely underweight, I don't think he could hardly see. He had major heart issues going on, and we had him put to sleep. Neither of us had ever done that before.
Oh.
Gray Boy was kind of a surprise. I mean, he was always going downhill, but, like, I found him dead, and I did not expect that to be happening anytime soon.
Oh, yeah.
And Tigger, it got weird. We actually made an appointment to have him put to sleep, and then we canceled it because we thought he was maybe doing a little better and stuff, but he was not doing better. And we came back from a movie and found him. So this was the first time we were really there and did it. And they were great. Cat Clinic of Iowa City has always been awesome. I think vets in general are really good at this stuff because... First of all, they have to deal with this. Euthanizing your patient isn't something that comes up in the medical profession very much.
Right.
But it happens a lot if you're a vet. And also, they have to deal with so many levels of owner. I mean, as Trish was saying the other day, there's people who would have put Twiglet to sleep as soon as it turned out he needed regular medicine.
Yeah, right.
And there's people, because we said, I said, like, I'm guessing there's not really anything to do. And he said, there are possibilities. None of them have real high percentages of efficacy. And I'm like, and it'll be really traumatic to him. And
yeah,
he's like, yeah,
exactly.
And that's the, I was like, money's not an issue, however much it costs, but quality of life is an issue.
Yeah.
And so you have to deal with all those different types.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really good at it. And they always have been. When Gray Boy went, I was expecting to be a mess. In his later years, he and I really, like, bonded, I think, because we both like to nap a lot. And so I expected it to be a disaster when he went. And I was surprisingly okay with it. And this one I had seen coming for, like, a few weeks. I was like, I feel like we're heading towards something. And I was surprised at how I sort of was processing it.
Sure.
Maybe because I had the time and I was doing it slowly. Until, like, that day.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even before we knew, when I came back from the gym... took a shower, like, I had to stay in the shower for an extra 5 minutes because I couldn't stop sobbing.
Right.
And at the vet, I was, like, Trish was an absolute rock, but I was just a disaster. And
sure.
It doesn't happen very often, but when I cry, I can't not cry, and I'm just It's just a mess. And I said, like, I'm not going to work today.
Sure.
We'll figure that out.
That's right.
And my boss was really understanding about that. She has a ton of pets, and she's been through this a lot.
Right.
Now that it's done, I'm better. Within a few hours afterwards, I was okay again. I mean, it's sad, and I miss him a lot.
Sure.
But, like, it's not. I'm not tearing up over it now or anything. But yeah, it was a big deal because he was like my pet. And like, I keep apologizing for this comparison. I get pets and children are not the same thing. And I can't even understand the difference because I don't have kids. But I get self-aware, intelligent, like different. I understand that. But in on a certain scale, this gave me a new perspective on the horrors of outliving your child.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I understand why that's a terrible thing. But in my head, it's like, because you love your child and you want them to do well and they die and that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And outliving anyone you love sucks. But I realize now that there's a whole other level because I essentially was there when he was born.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well after I had been born. And so my brain is like, of course, I'll die first. And but the fact that, like, his entire lifespan is inside mine,
mm-hmm.
in the middle, and that now I've got a bunch, hopefully, of life left, just feels wrong.
Yeah.
In my head, like, that's not how it's supposed to work.
Right.
And there is something, I think, about my mother-in-law that it's different, that, like, we do feel like we've known him since birth. I mean, we do know his actual birth date. Even Addie... Like, we've had Addie probably longer than I actually had Twiglet. Like, when he came to me, he was probably a little older than Addie was when we got Addie.
Mm-hmm.
But he was still, Addie was found on the side of the road somewhere in Frytown.
Mm-hmm.
And so we still, like, he had this life before. and same thing with Ezzy. Like, she was in the pet store, and she was little, but, you know, she did. So it feels a little different.
Yeah.
But him, it's like, no, I have absolutely been there for his whole life.
Sure, right.
So yeah, so it's been a very rough one for that, but doing better now. I catch myself every once in a while. Have I talked before about the driving off a bridge anxiety?
I don't. It sounds familiar, but I don't know if you've talked.
This
about
is
it.
A thing I experienced somewhat, not a lot, but I've had other people in my family who are also treated for anxiety. Who experienced a lot more. And one time I brought it up around a friend of mine who famously were on the same meds and everything. And he's like, oh yeah, I know about that. Like, so it's just a thing you have as an anxiety. And I think it's this anxiety idea of what if I did something horrible or completely out of character or whatever. And like, it freaks you out, the thought that you could do that. Like, the only thing that is stopping you doing that is your own personal willpower. And the classic one is you're driving across a bridge and you're like, what if I just cranked the wheel and just went off the edge?
Yeah, the other example I've heard of this kind of thing is when a car's coming toward you and you think, all I have to do is just swerve a little and I could have a head-on collision with this car.
And it's one thing to be like thinking of that. Oh, what? Think about that thought. And it is kind of an interesting thought experiment. It's only my will that's stopping that,
mm-hmm.
or anybody's doing that. But this one is like, you freak out about it and part of you is like, do it, do it. And it's not even a suicidal thing. It's a use your free will to break the rules thing.
Right.
So I bring this up because people are idiots. When you have your animal put to sleep, you have to sign a release form. And one of the things in the release form is you have to acknowledge that after a certain point in the process, it cannot be reversed.
Oh, okay.
Which is true.
Yes.
when you put down your animal, the first thing they do is they give the animal a sedative, and the animal falls asleep. And then when the animal is just asleep, they give another injection that'll euthanize them.
Sure.
So the animal dies in their sleep.
Right.
But yeah, so you have to do a thing. And they were explaining, and they're like, we will stop at any time that we can. Like if we give them the sedative and then we come back in for the other thing and you're like, we've changed our mind, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you have to sign a thing that says, I understand it's irreversible. First of all, that's the thing for me anyway. I mean, I like I said, people are stupid and I understand this. Irreversible things always freak me out.
Yeah, me too.
Just in general. But also,
that's why I don't have a tattoo.
He's doing it, like he's injecting him, and I have this urge, like, to wait for a three count and then be like, "Wait, bring my cat back." Which I'm like, something was so horrific in my head, and like, I didn't obviously, but like, something about that still lingers in there, and it bugs the shit out of me. And like, part of me really wishes that hadn't been mentioned in the release form. Because it's a horrible idea that makes total sense at the same time. It's that little kid saying, you know, bring back my grandma or whatever. But we still have, unfortunately, we still have the two bratty ones. but it actually, the thing, and I'm trying to cope with this, there are a whole lot of benefits from Twiglet being gone. The cats no longer outnumber us. We have two, we are two, and it works out really well because Addy is an absolute mama's boy, and Ezzy is very much daddy's girl. And so they come and snuggle, and there's no like infighting about that so much. Mm-hmm. They have spots they like to sleep. We no longer have to give Twiglet his medicine. Leaving on a trip is much easier now.
Sure.
He had a lot of habits from a lot of things that were annoying. That nobody, that day, I couldn't eat. And then I had slept like shit the night before, so I eventually like took a nap that day too. And when I woke up, I was like, okay, you haven't eaten for quite a while.
Sure.
You should order. So I ordered some pizza, and I was eating it. And at a certain point, I'm like, why is nobody bugging me for my, like, why is nobody coming and trying to eat my pizza? And it was him.
He's the only one that did that?
He was the only one that did that. Ezzy's not food motivated. It's weird. Never seen a cat like that before. And Addy just is too stupid to have ever put it together. I don't know. Twiglet has a lot of years of me feeding him people food and stuff like that. The damn thing where Trish taught him about drinking out of the tub, and he loved doing that. Like, Trish is honestly faster getting ready in the morning because she doesn't have to stop and wait for him to have a drink and stuff. There are benefits to this, and I mean, I think it's going to be good. I can't imagine if he'd been my only pet. Like, I would have no comforting animals to snuggle up with.
Yeah.
So that's good. But, yeah, so just putting all that out there. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast where you get to relive my loss of pets. So, if this is your first episode ever, Jesus Christ. I'm sorry. Oops. And I won't blame you for just going. That's fine. I get it. It's not normally like this, but you know, there's not really coming back from this as a first impression. Anyway. And I'm Tony.
I'm William. And this is episode 435.
All right. Okay, I should do what the show's about. Because it's not normally just about cat death. cat death sounds like a scientific phenomenon, like CAT stands for something.
Yeah,
so I just talk about cat death.
It does sound like that.
Yes, and you can see on this monitor. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks like yourselves, cool people, nice people, people willing to listen to that crap that I was doing. Write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards, with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Ever-loving servants... draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, and that's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which there's a lot of them. And sometimes they're about losing pets. Let me ask you something.
Sure.
How did you feel about me naming that one episode, Is William Autistic?
I don't know. I don't know.
It was fine.
It was just like any other thing.
It
didn't affect me at all, really.
It really bugged me after it was too late to change his mind. I don't know.
Oh.
It something about the, and it was part of why I put that little thing in the beginning. Something about it, I don't know, there was this weird combination of, like, even jokingly diagnosing you with a neurological condition.
Oh.
And the idea of trivializing autism.
Oh, well.
And I kept telling myself, I'm like, A, we talked very seriously about both autism and the idea that, you had relations to it. And that although you were very weirded out by the fact that I had already thought about it, you didn't seem bothered by that fact.
No.
But it just, on its surface, it was such a crazy idea that I kept being like, is that, I'm like, he would have said something.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Because I'm like, there have been other times where you have had small issue and have, with titles and rubbing, like, really? You had to call it that? So you didn't, but I was like,
no,
I think this is fine, but I think I'm weirding out because this is a very narrow circumstance in which it would be okay to title something like that.
Well, the thing is, we talked about, I brought it up. I was listening to...
And I was definitely not ever going to bring up my thoughts on it.
Right, that interview, and everything she was saying I could relate to, like, really relate to. Not just, like, superficially. It's like, well, I have that. I do that. So, and I was asking honestly. I didn't, you know, I'm not an expert in that. I wouldn't know how to diagnose it. I think you're right, though. I think that... when you look at all the stuff, it's probably not likely. And I'm relieved to not be diagnosed, not because there's anything wrong with people that are on the spectrum, but as you pointed out, you know, at 50, I've got other things to worry about.
There's a lot of components.
Thinking about, because the fact of the matter is, I'm at an age now where, you know, in the next decade, there's a likelihood that will be diagnosed with something.
Yeah.
And I'm not anxious for that to start earlier than it needs to. But it was a fairly serious conversation. I guess in a way it's odd to make it a title when usually the titles you pick are like funny or something.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I was like worried about that, and that's why I had to put that. Not only did the first sentence of the description say "spoiler alert: William is not autistic," on Facebook that was also the blurb I wrote.
Okay.
I was like, "William is definitely not autistic," because I'm just like I don't want anybody. But I couldn't think of another one, and I'm like, and it fits really well here.
It's fine. It didn't bother me at all, no.
I
mean, because, and again, if someone listens to it, they'll see, we had a serious conversation.
Yeah,
it wasn't
a
joke. We had a serious conversation about it.
As
serious as can be between two people that don't know anything about diagnosing
and
autism.
As serious as we ever get. Which,
yeah, right.
Unless we're talking about cat death, not that serious. So it's been 2 weeks.
I was wondering about that because it seems like it's been a lot longer.
Just because we keep having these breaks.
Yeah.
But we had the July 4th one. How has your time been? Did you have a good holiday?
We didn't go anywhere, but these days it's so stressful to plan things. It's fun and it's worth it and you love doing it, but then when something comes around and you don't really have anything to do and you just sort of do nothing, it's kind of nice.
Oh yeah.
Cuz it's relaxing and you can
absolutely
just sort of hang out. It seems like, there were a lot of things, that came up and things we watched.
I was going to say Crucial Media.
We've been getting a lot of, Netflix discs coming through.
You're the ones.
Yeah, we're the ones.
And my parents.
And
you and my parents.
We've run into this problem where we'll get, discs that are in our queue and there's a wait. Usually because they're newly released or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anyone else who used to get discs remembers this, but
they send the next one, which is often the next one in the series, which you can't watch.
Well, no, we figured out how to get around that, but maybe other people didn't do this, but sometimes we'll see something in a preview or we'll hear of some movie or whatever. And we'll just throw it in the queue. Maybe we'll, because it's at the bottom, we'll probably never even get it, but we'll put it in there and maybe it'll come and watch it. Well, we start getting just those after a while.
Wow.
Just those movies that you kind of threw in there
that
for nothing.
That means you are not maintaining your queue properly.
Exactly.
I remember this.
That's exactly
no,
what
cause
it means.
No, because I never had this problem because I maintained that queue. I curated that thing
so
regularly.
So we'll get these things that are obscure or things like, did you put that in there? I'm pretty sure I didn't put that in. And we'll watch it. Now, sometimes it's a surprise and it's really good. I mean, we did put it in there for a reason, usually.
Yeah.
But other times, sometimes it's great and we remember why we put it in there, and sometimes it's not and we remember why it was at the bottom. But yeah. Right now, we got a whole slew of those. I think maybe one of them was good and the rest of them weren't, and I don't even remember now. Mm. But, I mean, you know, it's what it is. Oh, this is what I was going to talk about. So my wife is playing Conan Exiles.
I noticed that. I wanted to ask about that because I have it because of PlayStation Plus.
Oh, okay. Why, was it free or something?
Yeah, it was one of the free games months ago.
She had to pay for it.
Well, are you a PlayStation Plus member?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
jump on that.
What she paid for was something that had like all the DLCs in it and stuff. Did the free one have all that?
I don't think so, but I don't know because I haven't. Every month I just go and find out what the free games are and click them into my library and then ignore them forever.
I should have mentioned what she got was like half price of its original price.
Okay.
So I think she could have gotten a bare bones version for free, but she wanted all the other stuff, so she went ahead and paid for that. Anyhow, here's the thing about Conan. Okay,
this has largely been an unsuccessful game commercially.
Let's see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. When it comes to Conan the Barbarian, the property.
Yeah.
There are things about the concept that I like a lot. Mm-hmm. I like that the guy who created it tried to put in as much historical, accuracy as possible, but not so much that he couldn't play with it and put in historically inaccurate stuff.
Yeah.
I spent
a lot of years thinking Conan was from ancient Sumer.
Oh.
He was a Sumerian.
Oh.
Because I only knew the movies and stuff. I didn't read it.
Oh, okay.
So I thought he was from Sumer. Because I knew Sumer from history books.
But, I like the idea of it. The era they set it in is probably the earliest era where you can reasonably have a sword and sorcerer kind of story.
Because Napoleonic Wars?
No. No. It's the era where you start having things like empires and stuff. I mean, I don't think you can have a good sword and sorcery story without a kingdom, right?
Yeah.
If you go like into the time before 10,000 years ago, it's you're not going to be able to do it. So I like the idea of having a sword and sorcery type of story just as soon as in earthly history as you can have it. And it's also a period where there are Paleolithic people, but also still Neolithic people. And so those two groups with their different technologies and worldviews can interact. And then he adds this interesting thing of having
lizard men,
Atlantis in the recent past. So you can even have some more advanced things like you can have Iron Age stuff that wouldn't normally work. And so you can do Wi-Fi. All these interesting anachronisms that are fun. So I've always thought the idea of it was really good. But the execution was terrible. I mean, all the excerpts I've read of this guy's actual writing, I forget his name, who came up with Conan.
Howard Grant, I think.
Something like that. But it's terrible. I don't like how he writes. When I've looked at
it's the... It's very dime store pulp of the age.
When I've looked at the comic books, I don't like them. Conan is a name that Irish people still use.
Yep.
And he's supposed to be in that from that area, but he wears like just a loincloth or whatever. That doesn't make any sense. And I don't appreciate the aesthetic generally, but I've always liked the idea. And so when we saw the game, and my wife feels similarly, but I think she doesn't mind the aesthetic so much. When she was young, she was a fan of, who's that guy that did all that fantasy art stuff?
Boris Vallejo?
It was either him.
Or Frank.
Frenetta?
Yeah.
I think it was him.
There were two or three who did all of them.
She really liked that stuff. And it's interesting, her interest in it, because first of all, she was an art kid, you know, in high school. But also, she came at it from a certain perspective. She's tall for a woman, but, you know, mm-hmm. your wife is too. And, you know, broad shoulders. I mean, you know, she's not dainty woman. So, and what a lot of people don't realize if they don't know, tall women, or women who are, you know, aren't, what am I say?
Petite, dainty. Yeah,
yeah, whatever. Is that sometimes they get a lot of crap.
Yep.
They're made fun of for lots of things, you know, that you can't imagine, and maybe a few things that you could, particularly if they have any kind of figure, you know. We were talking a little about something like this before, about how when we were growing up, it was pretty common for boys to have it in their head that if you could see a woman's figure, that she was showing it off and wanted you to make comments about it. When it could just be, what is she supposed to wear?
Yeah.
So you can't see her figure. It's ridiculous. So, for my wife growing up and having to deal with all of this nonsense, and of course, a lot of times you get unwanted attention from older men when you're a woman with that kind of build.
Yep.
And so that's annoying and creepy. So for her, art that portrayed, in what her mind was like Amazons,
yeah,
was empowering.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter if they were scantily clad or whatever. It was like, this is, because a lot of those illustrations, they were very muscular and they were very,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this was a different way to portray women, and she could relate to it, and she appreciated it and liked it. And I think she also related to Lara Croft in the video games for the same reason. She understood that the guys who designed it and a lot of the guys who played it probably appreciated it for different reasons, but she appreciated it for her reasons, and okay. That was fine.
You're like three tangents off of your actual story.
What it comes back to is that the aesthetic of Conan she likes for those reasons, because of how it how similar it is to those artists.
Yep.
That we're talking
about.
Got
that.
So we were both interested. I was interested in the game because I thought my problem with Conan the Barbarian has always been the execution. If you're creating a world that things are working in and you're RPGing it,
yeah,
then you can get all the good with none of the bad.
Yep.
And she felt the same way. So we thought, well, we'll give it a try. And it turns out it's exactly what we wanted.
Nice.
There are problematic aspects to it, but again, if you're RPGing it, you can kind of spin those however you want.
And it's not too MMO-y, because it's sort of online. And
well, she's only playing offline, though.
Okay, good.
She's only playing offline, and
because that was what looked like it appealed to me, but it looked too much like it was going to be an MMO or something. I'm like, I don't
know.
And the last Conan property was, so.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, she's just playing it offline. Again, there are issues, like, for example, when you build a base and you want people to be in your base, you have to fight them and torture them and make them slaves or whatever.
Oh, okay.
You can't just be their friends. Not an option.
Yeah.
But
that's how I am when I'm building bases these days.
But, I mean, it's not... When I say torture them, I don't mean like you're literally bloody torturing them.
In fact,
you don't even... It's just a process that you make the machine do. You don't even see anything happen or anything
that.
So, again, torture. If you RPG it a certain way, it's fine. These are your pals. They're in your base, you know, and you can build it however you want.
We're torture buddies.
And there's a lot of cool Paleolithic and Neolithic stuff, weapons, and you can build... I mean, you can just stay in the Paleolithic age if you want, if that's fun for you. Or... like I said, because of Atlantis being in the recent past, you can get metal, you can work metal, and you can evolve your builds to be going from like the Neolithic age to something closer to the early Iron Age, and it's just really fun. Now, some people who don't like, you know, the grind of hunting for things and crafting might not like it. But my wife,
I tend to like that.
My wife practically lives for that stuff in like Fallout and things.
Yeah.
So she's really enjoying it. I'm enjoying watching her play. I like the whole setup, basically. I mean, I'd sooner she have an option to walk up to a person and befriend them and just invite them to be part of her thing. But it's not that distracting. It's not that much of a problem. Now there are two ways that she could play with others. There's a way that you can invite like one person to you know, be in your little world and help you out on things. Or you can get online and it's like, I mean, it's not really like an MMO. It's more like you can do it with Red Dead Redemption too. You get online and there's
PvP,
a whole bunch of people.
Multiplayer.
Yeah. I don't know if she'll ever do that. That doesn't really appeal to her, but she's really liking the local, you know, single player thing. She's really liking it.
Maybe if I play it, she could invite me to her.
Hey, place. That's right. That's right. You might like it.
I think I might.
It's now, if you've, when you've played games like Fallout and a few other things, the animations and the graphics are just a little bit of a letdown, but not so much. I mean, you get used to it and that's fine
after that.
It's not a big deal after that. It's pretty good though. You can customize your own character, and the customization aspect is pretty good.
Good.
There's a lot you can do, and the building is very intuitive, and it seems pretty easy. It's built a survival game, not an RPG. So, when you're out in the world, you really have to be careful, or else you're gonna die, and then you have to go out to where your corpse is to get all your stuff back.
That's very MMO.
But there are ways to sneak around things. I mean, you know, and my wife says that that aspect of it really makes her feel like she's earned something. And so she's never played a survival game before. And so she kind of likes that aspect of it. She's on a low difficulty. She's not on something that's really hard. But she likes it. And it turns out that, you know, I always thought I'd like sort of the world of Conan, even though I didn't like any of the stories that were being told. And it turns out that's true. I do like it. She likes it. And it's fun, and we look forward to going forward in the game where she gets where she'll get to build different types of palaces with different kinds of materials. I mean, there's just that's another thing about the game is it seems like there's a lot you can do with it. Like it seems like she'll be able to play this for hours and hours and hours and hours and never get bored with it. So that'll be fun.
There might be some games I should recommend to you in the near future.
But this means that we might try survival games again. I mean, I say she hasn't played them. She got an aliens-based survival game, and she's tried to start it like 3 or 4 times, and she just can't, you know, stick with it because it's just too...
Alien Isolation or whatever?
Yeah.
That's a survival horror. That's a different kind of
game, though. Yeah, that's true. And maybe that's why... I mean, I think she sort of thought that all
this
the survival games were the same.
I don't know what you call it, but this is a base. This has a bunch of base building, which is
right,
very different.
Right. So this might be something she's interested in the future, as long as she can play offline, because I think she's definitely not interested in online survival games where everyone's just trying to kill you all the time.
That's
no fun for her, and she doesn't want to kill people. She just wants to play.
She just wants to torture them and invite them to her.
Like I said, you don't really actually torture anybody. What happens is you bring them to your base, and then you go to this thing called the Wheel of Pain, which was in a Conan movie, I think. And there is it's this stone wheel with a thing in it, and there's a guy on there pushing it. But the person you bring is never on the wheel. It's just that same guy all the time.
He's a jerk.
And then you just wait for an hour, and that your person is yours now.
Yeah, no. Conan's version of the training montage was him pushing the wheel in various seasons in Conan the Barbarian.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, that's what...
And that's part of the thing is there's a bunch of other people on the wheel too, but as the seasons pass, there's fewer and fewer, and he gets buffer and buffer. It's a real thing.
The Wheel of Pain. Well, anyway.
I don't even know what it was turning.
Like I said, if you're just playing by yourself, you don't have to take any of that stuff super seriously, and it can just be fun. And she likes it, and I like it. And I don't know if she'll play it tonight when I get home, but it seems like every time she gets home from work, we try to put a quick supper together so she can play
it right now.
She could be, but I don't think she is. When we podcast, you know, that's 2 hours that I'm gone. So.
Yeah.
Because it takes 20 minutes to get here and 20 minutes to get home, and there's an hour and change here. So she's got plenty of time every Thursday to do whatever she wants. But anyway, like I say, there's been some movies. And we're also watching that baking show still. And I wanted to ask you something. So you mentioned before when I was talking about how nice everybody is and they help each other, and you mentioned that there wasn't like a big prize or whatever. Do you really think that would make a difference? It feels like that's not why... I mean, because the stakes seem pretty high to these people. I don't think that it's...
It becomes very chicken and egg.
Yeah.
Because the lack of prizes could be viewed as a symptom for how they handle these competitions.
Yeah.
At the same time. But American shows of this nature tend to be very focused on, if I won this, da-da-da, it could change my life.
Yeah, they talk about
it. And sometimes it's
a
lot of money or something like that.
But see, here's the thing, though.
And this is a big deal. People who win or people who become finalists often have some celebrity that
they
can leverage.
But I think the main difference is not so much a prize or anything like that. I think the main difference is the American shows, and like you said, the prize or not might be a symptom of what's really going on. And I think the American shows want a certain kind of person. I don't think the American shows want nice people.
Well,
they want
the drama. The competition is secondary to the drama.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the British shows of this nature often are very about the actual competition. And they will make complications and difficulties to prove your ability to do the thing. But they won't, like, oh, now you have to do this blindfolded. Or now, halfway through, everybody's going to switch their cake batter with the person next to them, which is shit that would happen on
Or here's
ours.
A button you can push that'll hurt your opponents,
exactly,
but it'll benefit
exactly,
you.
Exactly.
Yeah, everyone's like, they all feel bad for each other when something bad,
yeah.
And they're all happy for each other when something good happens, and if someone's got time, they'll help another person. It's just so wonderful.
Now, don't get me wrong,
watching
this is
it.
The same country that created Love Island, which is a show that is finally coming to the U.S., which I'm terrified about. So, they have their own share of horrible drama.
No, crap.
But a lot of their competition shows and game shows are not like that.
Well, my wife likes watching it because the people are nice, and she likes cooking, baking things. I just like watching it because all these people are so nice, and it makes me feel good to see nice people. But so yeah, we're still doing that too, and we do that quite a bit. Oh, and there's something else that I don't remember now. But what's been going on with your 2 weeks besides what we've already talked about?
And I don't think there's enough time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was a little worried about the hat. If we had very many questions and I didn't.
Well, that's definitely not an issue because at this point we're going to have either one or zero. I'm not sure I'm unwilling to talk about all the things.
Oh, I'm sorry.
About,
I didn't realize.
So
I should have just.
I think the hat might be hosed. Sorry, hat. You can fucking deal.
it's my fault. Blame me.
No, I definitely do.
Okay. I'm sorry.
You should never write video game reviews because no one will. Like, this word count is too big. July 4th was absolutely horrible.
What?
Look over there. What do you see over there?
I see an air conditioner. Is it new?
Yeah.
Oh.
A new, exciting, fancy one. That one is 15,000 BTUs.
Was it in a box outside your door for a while?
It was.
Okay, that's what that box was.
Yes. And the old scary one is still out there. We're getting them to take it away soon. It kept melting the plugs and things like that, and then eventually died. And so we had gotten this. And so we spent July 4th putting that in.
Uh-huh. And that was difficult?
Incredibly difficult, just under normal circumstances. I don't recommend anybody do it.
Mm.
It's a terrible thing. Add to it the weather. It was incredibly hot and humid. And bugs, lots of mosquitoes. My legs are 30% bug bite now. And then add to that the fact it didn't fit in that window.
Well, it looks like it fits.
Now.
What did you do?
We got our neighbor to bring an angle grinder and literally cut a chunk, two chunks actually, out of the window frame.
Oh.
Because we own this place, so fuck 'em. And we don't intend to, like, take it out. It's not a real window air conditioner in the sense that we're not going to, like, take it out in the fall and put it back in the spring. It's just going to live in there. So, yeah, we cut a chunk out of the window so it would mostly fit, and then we're sealing around it. And, yeah, so that was a terrible day.
I mean, you know, there's...
And it was a huge strain on Trish and I, as like, just as... For our relationship,
yeah,
right. It was a mess.
I can see foam around it, but I mean,
yes,
looks like it's
that
in there nice.
It's good now. It's good now. But that Trish followed up and she like measured things and went and bought foam paneling and insulation and stuff and packed it around and all this. It doesn't look good out of that. Eventually, we're going to We have some spray foam. We'll do it. And we have paint that'll roughly match. So none of that's done. But it now is sealed up. But for the first couple of days afterwards, it was still had gaps. Like, we just made sure there was few enough that the cats couldn't get out.
Sure, yeah.
It was that bad. But it is also an awesome air conditioner.
Yeah, it feels good.
It's making so much difference. There's no issues with the electricals or anything. And this one, of course, has a trip on it. So if something happens, rather than the cord melting, it'll kick off.
Sure, right.
And it hasn't done that yet, and it's been running pretty much constantly. It has a remote. It has a dehumidifier setting. If you don't want it any colder and the humidity is just too much, it'll just dehumidify.
Oh, wow.
Downside in all of this, the circuit broke on the pool room, and it won't come back. Oh. Like, it's not every time you try and do it, it trips immediately.
Oh.
So the pool's dead, basically.
What
or at least the pool's a stagnant body of water now.
Oh, so, I mean, so you can't use it anymore?
I kind of cheated for a few days, but I'm like, I can only, it is unmoving water in the summer.
Mm.
Like, I'm playing microorganism roulette
here. Yeah, sure, sure.
So yeah, it's pretty much done for now.
Oh, no.
Until we get a handyman, which would probably be thousands of dollars and a lot of rewiring and stuff like that.
Really?
So, yeah, no, it's bad. I'm not happy about it. But we got this working, so that's good.
Yeah, that is good.
I finished Final Fantasy XII, which was good. I did finally hit the point where I was like, I'm kind of tired of this. I should just finish this up. So I did, like, in a day, I finished the last few things on it. And I started Assassin's Creed Origins just a few days ago.
You'd never played that before?
No. That's the next one for me. I had played Syndicate.
Oh.
And then now I got to play Origins, and then eventually I'll play Odyssey. But I try and space out my Assassin's Creed games.
Right.
Because when I play them, usually by the end I'm kind of tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to jump into a new one. I want to wait until I'm jonesing for it again.
Yeah.
Origins is very interesting. It's very different. They redid the combat and the whole thing. Like, I mean, it's called Origins. It's the start of it. I'm technically not playing an assassin because I'm technically playing somebody that assassins don't exist yet. Pretty sure this dude's going to be the first assassin, but he's not yet. But they also redid it, how the combat works mechanically. And it's set in ancient Egypt. And it's gorgeous. And they know it's gorgeous, too, because there's an option I haven't used yet called Discovery Tour where you can be in the game and none of the game things are happening. There's no combat, there's no enemies, there's no anything. But you can just wander around and, like, see stuff and, like, learn bits about Egypt and things.
Interesting.
And I'm like, I will totally do that.
Sure, sure.
It's awesome. Yeah. But you are playing Bayek, one of the Magi, is how you would pronounce it.
Okay.
It's where we get the Magi word from. But sure. It's a Egyptian word. They came up in the Mummy movies, too, but it's an actual thing. And they were sort of Pharaoh's elite, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Guardians of, but to a certain degree, also just protectors of the people. And spelled Medjay. And I was a little annoyed because you start this, and you're in this village, and the Pharaoh's coming, and you're smiling. And then you and the Pharaoh exchange this weird sort of unhappy look. And then it says, a year later, and suddenly you're in this tomb, and you're killing this guy who you were mad at for something. And then you start the game, and there are these masked ones you want to kill, and you killed one, but you have to find this, and you've been gone for a year. And I'm like, what happened? And then you just sort of start playing, and I got, like, tutorial quests and things, but I'm like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
Because I don't know who I'm mad at or why.
Yeah. What's my motivation?
Or anything. But
You're a method player.
I can't. Have you guys played any Assassin's Creed games?
No.
There's a weird conceit. Well, there's a lot of weird conceits in the Assassin's Creed games. And one of the big ones is you're technically seeing through this elaborate sci-fi machine the memories of an ancestor.
Right.
But one of the things that has happened since the beginning is you have your targets. And even though I'm not an assassin, I've got people I'm trying to kill. I don't necessarily know who they are, but like I know, like, there was this guy, and he had a mask. I have to find out who he is and kill him, you know, that kind of thing. And so this guy, and when you kill the first guy...
Problem with masks.
The guy... No, that's the thing is, it turns out there was a whole situation involving these masked guys who were doing this shit. When you kill one of your people, one of your targets, things immediately dissolve into this weird meta realm where you, like, have a conversation with them. And this is universal with, like, all the games. And it's basically a philosophical one every time. Mm. Where the person is like, oh, you're an idiot. I had this grand plan and you don't see. And or killing me won't matter. It's going to go on without me. Because it's all a very conspiracy theory game to it. Well, when you kill your first dude in this game, it triggers a flashback that you actually play through that tells you what happened.
Oh, okay.
And so now I feel better. Because it seriously, it just felt very weird. I was like, I mean, clearly we're the good guy, but who are the bad guys and why are they bad and why do we care?
Yeah,
and,
right.
So that helped. But yeah, I'm, it takes a while to get back into it. I always feel a little fumbly when I start playing an Assassin's Creed game again and I don't feel in the zone and everything feels hard and it feels like there's too many fiddly bits, but I'm getting there again now. So that's been fun. And I saw three movies I'd like to talk about. See, this is why we're not getting the question. Let's go with the first one real quick. The Sixth Friend is the 6th friend. It's on Amazon. People want to see it. It's a pretty standard bunch of people go into a cabin in the woods for a weekend and somebody's going to kill them. Slasher movie. And the original premise, you know how we talked about there's like very specific genres of horror movie, like plot points, and there's
right,
the
right.
paranormal investigation. Well, this is one that I've really gotten into in recent years. It's a subset of slasher movies, which is when we were young and stupid, we, a group of friends, did something young and stupid and something horrible and violent happened. Now, it's the Xth anniversary of that. And for whatever contrived reason, we're all getting together to catch up. And often it's we get anonymous invites for a party or whatever. But this one, a bunch of college girls tripped out on acid the night of their graduation from college. And yada, 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 somebody ended up dead. I guess I'd say that might. The guy who brought them the drugs hung out and stayed there, and he eventually tried to rape one of them, and they ended up killing him. And so, like, none of them were in trouble or anything. It was self-defense and all that, but, like, this trauma. And this is 5 years later, and they've decided to get back together because one of the friends has kind of disappeared from things, and they want to get back together and see stuff. But then hijinks ensue, slasher movie, yada, yada, yada. The reason I bring it up is it's a decent slasher movie. It's also all women, directed by a woman, and it's got good relationship interaction stuff. I'm not even saying necessarily accurate or whatever, but they spend a lot of time just on the friendships between these women. And there's this protracted scene when they're all going to bed, and one of them's being goofy and basically yelling through the walls, "Good night," and keeps doing it, and no one will say anything. And finally somebody's like, "Good night," and like, "That didn't sound sincere." And then they start getting like, and they start getting another person like, "You're an actress. Did that sound like real?" And they're like, "She needed more improv." And this whole thing. And then at one point, one of them was like, "Good night, bitches." And someone's like, "Why do you always call us bitches? I find it demeaning." She's like, "No, when I say it to you guys, it's an endure." And seriously, this is like a 5 or 10 minute conversation that felt super real being shouted through the walls before they all just go to bed. Also, you can never say none, but essentially, no sexualizing. No weird homoeroticism or there's no nudity or anything like that.
No particular male gaze going on in the camera work.
Not particularly. I mean, not anything that jumped out at me.
Sure.
So, yeah, minimal. I was pleased with that. It is still just a standard B slasher movie. Mm-hmm. The ending was a little intriguing. I kind of liked the end. I mean, because you always have to have like a twist on it, or else what's the point? And that was kind of good. So yeah, if you think that is the kind of movie that you're into, I think this is a good one to watch. So I would recommend that. Also, last night watched Paris is Burning, the fairly famous 1990 documentary on the New York drag ball scene. Sort of the first thing that led us to things like Pose.
Yeah.
And Saturday Church and all that stuff. Having watched it last night, I'm pretty sure I saw it before. because there were weirdly specific things that I knew were going to happen.
Yeah.
And some of them appreciated. But it's not a great documentary in terms of craft.
Mm.
It's fine. Mm. It's not great. It's an amazing documentary in terms of content. It is absolutely a world you would not ever have seen. And it's fascinating.
Mm.
And it's very dated. There's a lot of stuff in it that people say that I'm like, that feels weird now. I'm like, but it wouldn't have felt weird when this came out.
Mm.
And it's just a very fascinating look into some early community building in the 80s gay scene.
Mm.
And a lot of very interesting, honest takes from a lot of subjects. And they talk a bunch of people and all, and the houses that were created and the balls and what that means. And they have some older queens who talk about, like, I came up in this in the 60s and 70s and it looked very different than what this looks like now.
Mm-hmm.
And why they do it and what it means. It's fascinating. And I highly recommend it. It's just on Netflix. I highly recommend it. But yeah, I think I've seen it before. And then the other thing, and we're already at time, so this is going to be weird. We just saw the new Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
And it's tricky now. It's so hard to rate an MCU movie as just a movie.
Hmm.
Like, as a standalone thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as a component in the MCU, this is great. This is a great place to be after Endgame. This is a great chunk to the story, very much so. I think it was a pretty good movie overall, though. I definitely think it's as good as Homecoming was. It's still in that vein. Tom Holland is still nailing that kind of thing. I would definitely recommend it if y'all are into those kind of things. Samuel Jackson gets a lot more time in this than a lot of these ones, which is fun. Yeah, it was pretty good. Jake Gyllenhaal does a pretty good job. We spend a lot more time with Spider-Man's friends and stuff. I was quite pleased. The action was very good. If you go see it, there are two post-credit stings. Both are quite significant. You should watch them both. They are important. The first one especially tells me that the next Spider-Man movie, I have no idea what that's going to look like. Things that significantly change how shit happens in one of those. So that was interesting too. So that's all the time we got, people. If you want us to actually read questions and stuff, you know, let us know in the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. Hopefully pretty soon. Unfortunately, I'm going on vacation again soon. Pretty soon, we'll be back to just, you know, one a week and normal. And then we won't have this problem. Because we have to... Remember, we don't talk at all outside of this podcast.
Yeah.
So we have to catch up if we don't do it. And
right.
We love you guys, but that's actually more important to us than y'all. to me, at least. I don't know.
Yeah, to me too,
but,
yes.
All right. But yeah, write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com because we are getting low, and that's good. And we will talk to you next week, and maybe we'll answer questions there. Who knows?
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.